Hi, everyone. This is Zach Sherman, and welcome back to Handling the Heat, the podcast by RestaurantEquipment.biz, where we dive into the real stories behind the people powering the food service industry. Today, I'm joined by Stefano Marzano, co-founder of Mighty Meals, a prepared meal company focused on high-quality, nutritionally balanced meals. During our conversation, we get into his early days working in his family's restaurants, the late nights and overnight shifts that went into starting Mighty Meals, and how those early decisions led to building a company that now operates across 27 states 10 years later. We also talk about food quality, menu development and scale, and what it takes to keep a brand evolving in a crowded space. Tune in. Stefano, thank you so much for joining us here on Handling the Heat. Super excited to talk to you about your journey with Mighty Meals.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here. Let's get started.
Cool. So, Stefano, the first thing we ask everybody is, what's something you've enjoyed recently eating?
Wow. I ate a lot of different types of food, but honestly, I'm Italian. I was first generation. Parents were born and raised. So, for some reason, I've been love cooking chicken parmesan at home. It's simple with like a nice arugula salad with fennel, balsamic vinaigrette. It just hits every time. Yeah.
It's good. It's warm. You know, it's warm now that it's getting a little bit colder out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Stefano, let's talk about that family upbringing and let's go back to your kind of beginnings of your journey with food and working in and around your family restaurant. So can you talk to me about kind of your first experiences working in the family restaurant or getting exposed to food from a cultural perspective for you, which I think is obviously very important to the work that you're doing today?
Yeah, of course. So essentially, I was pretty much born in restaurants. My grandfather was a restaurateur. My dad is a chef and restaurateur. My mom was in the restaurant business for over 20 years. My sister owns restaurants. So it's literally like all I knew. I remember at the age of 12, I would go in on the weekends and just like wipe menus down. And then every holiday was always like spent around the restaurant, or if it was at home, it was always congregated around the kitchen. I mean, that's what brings my family together. I mean, like whenever we do Christmases now, it's like everyone does a dish. My aunt always bakes. Me and my dad always usually do, you know, the mains and center of the plate stuff because we're chefs, I guess. and then there's always the you know, the stragglers of the family that kind of just go like buy something, like my brother. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, I remember it really started, I think, I was not the best in school. I was a little bit of a troublemaker. And didn't like to listen to rules much. So I got suspended for a week from school, I think just for something silly and stupid. So my parents made me go work at the restaurant for free. Like pretty much that was my punishment. Like you're going to go work with no pay. Of course it was like, it was hot. And this restaurant at the time was the oldest family restaurant owned in DC. It was called Famous Luigi's. It was opened in 1943. Old school, like checkered tablecloth pizzeria. So of course they put me in the basement shredding cheese, even though you could buy shredded cheese. It's like, we got to do it like the old school way. And like, you got to like shred it yourself. And that was hell. And then the next day they put me on the salad and pizza or the salad and sub line. And then I was like, oh, this is fun. Like I'm very ADD. I love to move around. And I found it easy, right? It came very easy to me and the thrill of being in that rush of having like 300-400 covers in within 3 hours, right? Because 19th Street lunch rush, it's like go, 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 right? You need to be in and out within, you know, 30-40 minutes. So that's kind of where it all started. I was like, whoa, this is like, it came very natural to me. So then I jumped co-op junior, senior year, which is interesting because freshman, sophomore year, I wrestled. But I couldn't, like, if I did co-op, I couldn't wrestle, right? Because, like, wrestling practice was, you know, 2-3 hours, and then it just didn't make sense. So I joined co-op. So I left school early, starting junior year, would go drive into D.C., work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, pretty much the night shift. And then that's, like, how I made my way on the line, right? I worked every station except the pizza station. Like, I can do a lot in the culinary world. Like, don't ask me to make a pizza. I almost burnt my buddy's restaurant down a few months ago. Like,
that's kind of ironic, no? Starting at shredding cheese and still not being able to conquer the not burning a pizza down.
I love pizza. Pizza is a different type of finesse, right? It's totally. Like baking.
Scientific.
Baking science. You know, cooking's more of a philosophy. Like, rules are meant to be broken. Pizza's just has its own beast. But anyways, I mean, yeah, so honestly, I was self-taught, you know, through my family and experiences. And then I went in stage for a few chefs too. Then I went to culinary school for a semester, and I'll never forget, my teacher said, you'll never make any money in this industry. It was just like belittling the industry. And I'm like, I'm about to spend like $100,000 of tuition, and you're saying that. So I just dropped out of that and just like kept working. Yeah, I mean, then my dad and my sisters are business partners. They opened a restaurant together called Osteria Marzano. So I helped them open that. When I mean helped, I literally was just a line cook. I didn't like do, you know, I didn't do any of the, I was 18 or 19 years old. I didn't know anything about that. I really didn't even know how to cook really well back then either. You know what I mean? Like really just didn't have much tenure under my belt. So that's how that started me in the cooking world. And then, you know, the next chapter evolves after that, which we can get into later.
No, that's interesting. And I think the fact that you were around it, regardless of whether or not you really knew what you were learning when you're in the room with your, you know, family and how they're opening up their restaurants or, you know, your extended family, but getting actually to work and with them from the ground up and, you know, figuring out what worked for you and what didn't, I think is a critical kind of piece of that entry level of these kinds of journeys. Cause I think a lot of people just get swept up in it. And, you know, whether or not it was because of, you know, the fact that you were suspended from school or whatever, you know, it's a good start to.
Honestly, it could be. And you know what, looking back on it, I'm glad I got suspended. Yeah. Here we are now.
No, I think there's a lot of stories like that. It's like you just fall into something and then all of a sudden you find something that clicks for you, like the salad bar. And then it's, you know, only up from there. Cool. So Stefano, let's transition now then into Mighty Meals. Cause I think that's kind of where, from what I understand, your journey transitions from something of, you know, this is something that I can do to something I really want to do and want to grow and pursue as something that is an extension of yourself almost. So can you talk to me about linking up with your business partners and kind of putting the initial ideas together for what ended up becoming Mighty Meals?
Yeah. So at the time I was 19 and I was really, you know, physical fitness, and I met my co-founder Alex 3 years prior through, you know, he was a personal trainer and I went to the gym all the time just to like cut weight for wrestling. And, you know, I was like, I wrestled at like 130 pounds. So I was always like light. And, you know, I always wanted to like get to 140. So I was like, how do I gain weight? Cause I was always like, I guess you could say a shrimp in high school. Like I couldn't put weight on no matter how hard I tried or what.
Even with eating, sitting around in all these Italian restaurants, still tough to, you know, having like pizza and whatever
else.
Isn't
that crazy?
I would be in a different position.
It's like triple carbs,
I think.
every meal. But so then my mom, this is random, like we would just talk at the gym. Then my mom wanted to go to Peru and climb Machu Picchu, which she did. But she's like, I need to get ready for that. So she needed her first trainer. I was like, oh, I'll connect you with my buddy Alex. So that happened. Then like he came to the restaurant with his girlfriend at the time, which comes to an Italian restaurant for Valentine's Day and orders the burger, which by the way, the burger is great, but it made no sense. Like, what? But I always give him crap for that. The way it's like, people were asking me, oh, will you meal prep my food? Because they saw me posting like my meal preps. And I was like, no. Like, I remember, at 19 years old, like, you're not thinking, I wasn't thinking in the mindset I am now, like, you know, 12 years later, right? But essentially, like, really, the restaurant would close at 10 p.m., we'd get in there at 11 p.m. We would work all the way till 6, 7 in the morning, cooking, packaging, and then go deliver the meals from 7 to like 3 p.m. So literally like, you know, 19 to 22, it was that for like 3-4 years. So like while all my buddies are away at college and all that on the weekend partying and all that, I was literally working the graveyard shift every weekend. We didn't have we were everything.
Yeah.
The dishwashers, the preps, the cooks, the marketing. And not only that, during the week, we would prep in the morning. And then at night, we'd literally be doing like anywhere from like 6 to 15 events a week, literally just popping up tables at Orange Series or F45s or Gold's Gym, literally just sampling out meals and trying to sell a product. It was like bootstrap guerrilla marketing style, just literally just being everywhere and anywhere we could. Like if it wasn't for my sister and my dad giving us the opportunity to, you know, use the kitchen on the after hours, I don't think we'd be able to start it with, you know, we had no like capital investment at the time. I guess you could say we'd literally just out of pocket money and savings. And then honestly, the big thing I think that it, you know, helped was, you know, the arrogance of a 19-year-old of not knowing, you know, the risk. I've always had high risk tolerance, but then the arrogance of like not knowing, like scaling a business, personal guaranteeing, like, you know what I mean? Like where the mental toughness really starts to kick in, right? Like at that time it was very physically tough and draining on my body mentally too, I guess you could say, but you know, it was more physical draining. Now it's like, it's a mental game. And, once we were there, you know, we were in my dad's kitchen for about 9 months. We got up to like 900 or 1,000 meals a week. My dad politely was like, you guys got to get the fuck out. Like, you know, he said it in a nice way, but he was always like, come on, guys, you guys, like, it's time. We were taking like fucking, the walk-in was like just overflowing with like our stuff. We were putting stuff in the beer cooler, like the dry. It was just like, what? It was just crazy. So that's like how it started.
Well, it's a far cry from where it is now, but I think, you know, the kind of toughness of both of you to go out there and just get it done by any means necessary with obviously the access that you had to a commercial, you know, kitchen is super critical. But I think for me, what's interesting, Stefano, and I'm curious your thoughts, is there's a difference from I'm a line cook, I'm cooking, I'm prepping my own meals, to let me now think about this as something I'm doing for others. Right. And it's a totally different headspace that I think you have to be in, even in those early days where, I mean, you're doing 1,000 meals a week, so it's not small scale by any means, but it's different when you're trying to evolve. But it's you in a kitchen versus, you know, the facility that you work through now. So I guess my question is, what was that initial switch from, or how did that transition go for you when you go from, hey, I'm just meal prepping with me and my buddies at the gym, to, okay, we're out there, we're getting all these people at different fitness classes, we're doing all these interesting guerrilla marketing pop-ups, and now I have to go and create and develop recipes and think more, you know, PL, like what's hitting the bottom line for each of these recipes for the people that you're actually selling to versus, you know, what's just best for you yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, it took about 2 years for that click to happen. And I remember it really well because that summer was a very challenging time. Because like the first 2 years, it's literally like, I was forgetting what day it was because it was like, it's just go,
then you're right? Delivering all day.
Yeah. And then like you're running graveyard shift. And then like, I was probably averaging like, you know, 2 to 5 hours of sleep a night, or I mean, I guess a day, cause I would sleep during the day or whenever I would sleep whenever I could, you know what I mean? Like, I don't like sleeping anyways. I don't sleep much as is still today. If anything, I still sleep maybe 5-6 hours a night, but it really hit in 2017. So in 2017, all these events and stuff, we finally got, at the time, Territory Foods was like the big player in the DMV area. They were venture backed. They were the big dogs, and they were like, you know, I just kept seeing like they raised Series A, B, boom, and I'm like, shit. They have all like, they have all the market share in the DMV. We had an in with Vita Fitness. The RD was a huge fan of us, just liked our product much better. The macro counts were so much better. The portion sizes, the cost, the service, all, everything. So she got us a meeting with the CEO. I remember that like day I made all the meals. I didn't let anyone touch the food. I made everything myself. I think I made like 10 meals, but I just... for this meeting, it had to be perfect, right? So we get there, we get to the meeting. The meeting was at 12. It's like 1:48. I'm like, we're waiting. And then like pretty much like his assistant said he was busy, whatever. We're walking down the stairs. He's walking up. I guess he was like playing racquetball. I don't know. But he just looked like he had worked out. I literally just like, it was like within, it was a 20-second exchange of words. Boom, boom, boom. Hand him a Peruvian chicken, which by the way is still on the menu today. And I'll never take it off. 30 minutes later, we get an email from our, I guess you could say, liaison, which was R&D. She pretty much forwarded us an email from him to her saying, this product is night and day difference. Let's make the steps. Let's get, you know, Territory out, bring Mighty Meals in. Their contract ended in September that year, and this was in June, right? So we were about to take on, you know, they gave us the average orders they were getting from territory a week between all five of their locations. I believe they have seven now. And it was a lot. Like, it was like a lot. And we're like, okay, we're about to get an influx of orders coming in 3 months. We don't have the CapEx to build out. We're in 2,100 square feet, which was like already, that's another story, but a shit show. It was just so small. At the time, it was shared. I mean, again, you know, that like, I live my life of whatever it takes mentality. Because at the time, I'm like, yeah, well, like, yes, say yes. We'll figure it out later. Again, sometimes you get a little lucky. Ironically, my neighbor in the industrial park was moving or wanted to leave. I was like, cool, I'll pay to move you out or I'll help pay, you know, like the trucking, whatever. It was just a carpentry business. So a bunch of racking and stuff like that. Then it's like, well, we don't have any money, so let's take out a loan and max out credit cards, right? Because we need to build a cold room. We need a new refrigerator. And we have to do construction too, right? So like, let me put my hard hat on because I know a lot about construction. No, I don't. So like that summer, I broke through a load-bearing wall without like pulling any permits. I built the whole thing, not pulling one permit from the county. I didn't even know you needed. I mean, I kind of like once the project started, these small GCs were like, yeah, you know, you need to pull a permit. I was like, nah, we'll be fine. I was like, I got to get this up. I got to get this shit on by like September 23rd. I just remember that date. I was like, so like we got it all on. And I just remember like it, like that summer was so hot. So like the quality, like I was like, we need this cold room. Like it was bad, right? Like cold chain is everything in my world. And that there's a whole nother science to that we can get into later. But, you know, we did what we did. We got through it. And it was awesome. I mean, that's really the turning point of like, whoa, we got something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another time too, it's like people would start to notice when people start noticing the logo is like, that's, or if you say like Mighty Meals and they're like, oh, I've had them, or oh, my cousin or my friend just had surgery. I just ordered her 2 weeks worth of like, I love hearing stories like that. That's when I knew like, this is starting to become a household name, you know, locally. And I'm like, this is amazing. So then you start doubling down and it's like, again, I have no shame in saying I graduated high school with a 1.5 GPA, didn't go to college. But so I'm like, but, you know, I'm very obsessed with learning on things I want to learn. In school, nothing really interests me. So I was really starting to get interested in like the business side of things, right? The marketing, the financial, the legal, and then optimizing service, right? Just being customer success, customer obsessed of just like, how do I think like a customer of mine, right? And I used to be very competitor obsessed. And I think a lot of founders are at the beginning. And then like, you know what? If you just stay in your own lane and become customer obsessed, you're going to make noise and people are going to, it's going to do its thing.
It'll resonate,
right?
With the right people.
It took me. Right. Yeah. It took me, you know, 3-4 years to learn that. And then, you know, at that point we got into COVID, which whole nother wild one.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I was doing delivery foods in COVID and I pride myself on going to the, you know, green market and buying my own ingredients and whatever else. But I think what's interesting, 702, is the conviction that you had for the product being, I mean, first and foremost, even before customers or competitors, it's the product that you were putting forward that you felt so strongly in from a nutrition standpoint, from a quality standpoint. The fact that, you know, the CEO of your first large customer was turned by the fact that the food was that much different, I think is, I mean, at the end of the day, everyone hopes that their product is better, but you had tangible evidence to prove that your product was superior to these larger, more, you know, financially backed players in the space. And I think that's probably the biggest kind of pat on your back, obviously people knowing, but like if your food is good, the customer obsessiveness becomes easier, you know, like it just becomes a little bit more nuanced from there. So
it's usually like it's the other way around.
No, totally. And it's like, how do we make and people that's like how our
I,
product?
That's what we did different, right? Like I was a chef first, and then I guess you could say I became, you know, I became to understand the business side, right? So usually it's like on a lot of my competitors, it's like they are not, they have no culinary experience. You know, they're either like finance guys. Yeah. Or, you know, logistics and ops. So it's kind of interesting how I went at it from a completely 180.
Yeah.
And I, seems like it's working. Yeah. So I'm actually riding that wave.
No, totally. Stefano, I'm really curious about meal development because I think when you, I mean, obviously quality is paramount in, you know, the straight to home food delivery space. But for me personally, and I think a lot of consumers that are potential consumers of Mighty Meals are interested in diversity or some kind of, you know, interesting flavor, interesting things. One of the things that it kind of brings up in my mind is the origin of Trader Joe's being interesting food products for people who have the income for it, but don't necessarily have the dollars to go out to like a fancy Japanese omakase, you know, restaurant, but like they want to try some of these new flavors. And I think what you're doing is interesting too, because it hits all of the, you know, basic nutrition that you need from, you know, two athletes, right? And you're coming at it from that perspective. But I think kind of the culinary development that you bring to the table that's different maybe from some of your competitors. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, now, especially when you've scaled to the scale that you've had, what does R&D look like for you as you're coming out with new flavors? And obviously you have your tried and true staples like the Peruvian chicken that got you your first big client. But talk to me about like what that process kind of looks like now, especially when yeah. at the scale that you're at.
Yeah. So great question. You know, it's interesting. It's the one thing I miss most about the business is that because I'm not involved on that anymore from a micro level like I was. I still am involved in all, you know, we have two meetings a week, which are so fun because we're always just eating, you know, new products and stuff. But, you know, essentially our culinary team is about 70 people with 10 managers over that. And we just onboarded a culinary development and assurance chef. And now my big thing, you know, with AI becoming so awesome and advancing and, you know, on the daily basis, that's, you know, our biggest thing in our industry that can, you know, push a customer away is menu fatigue. That's why we have about 170 SKUs that are live with all different types of ethnicities. When you create a profile on Mighty Meals, we collect about 40 data points. So we're really involved in tracking data. So we have about 8 years of data that now we're building a tool of what products do we remove and what products should we add that we haven't even created yet that we should develop based on new diets coming out. You know, GLP-1 is a hot fad that, you know, needs, you know, support diet around it for it to really have optimal results. So really, honestly, like I'm really big on just taking, scraping the data that we've, you know, we turned 10 this year. Like we're about to launch our 10 year. So we have so much data over the years. And it's like, it used to literally, honestly, when we started, it's like, what do we feel like eating? Now it's literally like, it's down to the science of, you know, these two tools we've built out where we, you know, it takes all our customer data and then, you know, scrapes a ton of data from databases online and starts to spit out, you know, this is what you should develop in the coming months based on this seasonality. You know, these super greens are trending. People are staying away from this because, you know, food is ever so evolving, right? And there's different diets, even within, you know, you have, you know, traditional diets, but then when even within these traditional diets, there's, you know, new elevated in that diet field, right? So like, if you go on our menu, we got, like I said, 170 SKUs, our filtering process is pretty intense. The things you can pick, slider on the macro, we're coming out with this tool too, to really help literally automate the customer experience of like, hey, I'm a 31-year-old male. I want to gain 10 pounds of muscle. This is my budget. This, you know, and that's like really just trying to bring, you know, health tech into our menu, yeah. development and then in product development.
No, that's, I think it feels like out of some science fiction movie, you know, it's like, this is exactly what I need. But then you're providing it in like a tangible, you know, product too. And I think the fact that you can hold 170 plus SKUs and still develop more and think critically about like what you're doing, I think is from a consumer standpoint, probably the most effective type of marketing is having, like I said, good quality products, but new products coming in on, you know, whatever cadence that they are. And I think that's critical, especially when menu fatigue, you said, is as important as anything else, you know, making sure you're providing your customers with new and interesting things.
Yeah. And to add to, like, you know, right now it's like body hacking is like really big, right? So the next thing I think about too, right, is diets around biomarkers, right? You know, you pull a blood panel, it's like, okay, if I have your blood panel, and again, this is just really early stages, but if I have your, you know, if I had your biomarkers and panel and I have all this data, I can literally create a diet for you. It's called, you know, we, like, as a country, like, my thoughts are we're very reactive to our health instead of proactive.
Yeah.
So if we were proactive, I mean, 70% of disease is lifestyle choices, right? So, like, you can go to the gym and work out and do that. That's great. But, like, our body is a huge filter. And if you're not putting the right things in it based on your biomarkers, you're not really living an optimal lifestyle, right? So I think there's a lot there, especially with the tech evolving. Like, we have the infrastructure on the food side. Now I'm really thinking of the business, like, moving into, you know, that space. And that's where I really see that, you know, the next decade of where I want to spend my personal time in the UP organization.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because I think that's, you know, a good transition as any, because, you know, going from serving 1,000 meals a week to scaling across 27 states with multiple business partnerships that you're providing food for and continually incorporating different technology into, like, the operations of what you're doing, both from a culinary standpoint as well as from a logistics standpoint. But I think one of the things, Stefano, that probably I'm assuming a lot of your time is just based on the content that I see online is on marketing and digital marketing. And I think that's something that, you know, especially being a consumer product at the end of the day, you have to be at the forefront of what people see. Otherwise, you know, it becomes more of a commodity than anything else, and it's not representative of what you're providing. So can you talk to me a little bit about how digital marketing and the technology that you've used has enabled your business to grow and scale at the pace that it has over the last, you know, about to be 10 years?
Yeah, of course. I think, one, we have an amazing marketing team and agency we use. They're just really good at what they do, really smart, very data-centric, data-driven. And honestly, you know, in the early days, that's what taught me to be data-centric and data-driven in a space that, like, the food space, we're not, it's starting to be, right? But it really wasn't thought back then like that. So that got me, you know, that's kind of what influenced me to start thinking that way in my own business. You know, in 2020, the world changed overnight. I have a lot of friends that are chefs, restaurateurs, you know, my sister and my dad, chef and restaurateurs, and it just all went to shit overnight. And it's like, okay, our business model was, you know, we had pickup locations in gyms and we did home delivery, but 86% of our revenue was pretty much delivering the fridges in gyms. 14 was, you know, home. Overnight, everything shut down. So it's like, whoa, what do we do, right? On the operational side, we did what we needed to do, but really it's like thinking, this sucks. You know, like, I'm talking to my colleagues and not colleagues, but, like, you know, people, you know, around my friends, chefs, just seeing, like, the struggle. So we came out with this idea. We call it the Mighty Movement. It's like, how can we help out? We donated probably like over 60,000 meals that year to, you know, first responders. We would pick a hospital every weekend and we would just go there with meals, right? And then, you know, companies started seeing that and they wanted to start backing it, right? So we did a partnership with Khaki. I believe they donated like $50,000. And obviously we, like, discounted the meals heavily so we can get more meals to the hospital. And it was huge. It was just like the snowball effect. And honestly, it was so cool to, like, feel like I grew up in the DMV my whole life. It was cool just to be able to, like, at least for me, feel like I was a part of something and helping, right? Alongside that, like, we had another facet, like, how do we help the restaurants out, right? People were still ordering food because they were scared to go to grocery stores. And the people that went to grocery stores, like, my mom would, like, put Windex on apples.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what are you doing? I was like,
way worse for you than just going to the grocery store.
Yeah, no one really knew what the hell to do during COVID, right? As far as like, how do we handle it? How do we mitigate this?
Right.
But so we made a whole landing page and we partnered up, you know, with all my restaurant friends. And pretty much every time you bought a gift card to the restaurant, we would give you like 5X reward points for Mighty Meals, right? To incentivize, help you do the restaurant. And then we do videos and kind of just storytelling, like just help out where we need to, right? So, I mean, that really got me thinking of like, okay, we have a food company now. That's great. But now like philanthropy is like a, like I've really, like we don't talk about it much because I get kind of, it's kind of weird like talking about like, hey, we're doing this and donating this, you know, it could come off as fake, right? But like since that Mighty Movement, I mean, we've donated probably over a 250,000 meals.
It's amazing.
And now the big one, like the really, really big one that's like near and dear to me is our partnership with Children's National Hospital to help fight food insecurity, you know, in adults and children. Reason being is the first 18 years of my life, I went to Children's Hospital. I was legally born blind, had 6 surgeries on my eyes. So thanks to them, I can see and actually cook and, you know, be able to do what I do. So we donate meals weekly to them. And we're really looking to build that relationship on a bigger scale. And it's crazy how full circle everything is, right? And it's just cool because like, again, for me personally, like if it wasn't for them, who knows if I'd be able to see, right? So I feel like I'm paying it back the way I can, right?
Yeah.
Any way I can possible. So really, really excited. And it just so happens to be on our 10-year, like the first 10 years of the business was all about growth. The next 10 years is all about purpose and innovation in my eyes, which will naturally just bring growth within itself, right?
Yeah.
But really, like, you know, I'm really, you know, right now, you know, the first 10 years we were a growth company. I'm looking to turn Mighty Meals from a growth company to an actual brand, and brands last and they stick, right? So, you know, right now we're in 27 states. We're probably going to be national by sometime in 26. We're just doing it in phases. We're not venture backed. We're not PE backed. We're scrappy. We've always been
grinders.
Scrappy.
Who built something over the last 10 years. That's amazing. Awesome. Well, Stefano, I think your story is inspiring. And I think the purpose stuff, especially your partnership with National Children's and, you know, the other philanthropic avenues that you all have worked through is really amazing. And it's awesome to see that, you know, it could go from two guys overnight in a kitchen to what it is now.
We got a team now of about 135.
Wow.
And that's the coolest thing too, honestly. Like I love going to the office and just, I think, like there's the office clown. Like I'm that guy because I just love walking around and just talking to everyone, saying what's up. It's just cool.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's like, you know, it took 10 years to build it up to where it is. And obviously there's a shit ton of hardship on the way. And it's even today, it's a roller coaster ride. But, you know, as you get some tenure, your emotions get used to, you know, the punches and you just keep going. But it's just awesome. Like I just building the company culture to what it is today. Like I love my team. We're throwing a huge 10-year anniversary party for the team this year. And I'm excited to celebrate with everybody.
That's awesome. I'm sure you'll have good food there at the 10-year party. I would hope.
But yeah.
And, awesome.
And good liquor.
yeah, that too. Awesome. Well, Stefano, thank you so much for your time. Very much appreciated. And here's to, you know, way more than 10 more years of Mighty Meals.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you, Zach. And I love what you're doing. It's awesome.